You're listening to RepMo Radio. Welcome to another episode of RepMo Radio, where we hear from people of interest and influence who live and work in the city we love. If you or someone you know has an interesting job, hobby, or a story to tell, reach out to me on Facebook or send an email to jake@repmoradio.com. On this episode, you will hear from Iraq War veteran and Stone County Deputy Mike Marenghi. We touch on his time in the Marine Corps, the struggles many veterans have with PTSD, and what his future looks like in Stone County. Please enjoy my conversation with Mike Marenghi as we join it in progress.
Sure.
I grew up here. Yeah. You like born here, grew up here, all that kind of stuff?
I wasn't born here. Actually, my parents, we moved down here my eighth grade year. We had moved down here. My dad got a job, and this is where they want to settle. They like the school district. So
from where?
From Northwest Missouri, actually. So north of St. Joe, so Maryville, Missouri.
Okay.
There's nothing up there but farm country and a university. That's really the only things up there.
Okay. So came down here. He came down here for Republic schools or just like the Springfield area schools.
Springfield area. It was actually more because of job. School kind of came separate after the fact, I think. But yeah, it was more for a job. He was a manager for MFA. That's what it was. MFA at the time, and they transferred him to a job down here, and ended up in Republic. And we moved in. They bought a house, and our first night in was the day before my first day of school.
Like, oh, dang.
Yeah, like me and my brother slept on sleep bags on the floor because it was school the next day, you know.
Oh, dang. So then you're like, here, okay, I guess I'm going to meet some new friends in whatever grade. Like,
right.
What element? So what, fifth grade?
Eighth grade.
Eighth grade.
So I was in middle school.
Yeesh.
So an awkward time to meet friends.
Yeah,
right?
Like moving right in the middle of middle school. And back then, you know, Republic was a little smaller, a little more clicky.
Right. Very clicky.
Yeah.
I knew nobody. All these kids have been to school together for a long time, and then they're like, who's this guy?
So were you a good kid, or were you more of like a miscreant, you know, little hooligan?
I would say I rode the fence on both. Depends on the day of the week. I mean, I wanted to get into law enforcement, the military, and stuff like that.
So you weren't like, hey guys, anybody want to go throw rocks at cars?
Right. It wasn't quite that level.
It wasn't quite that.
But that being said, it's like, you know what? I'm down to do something stupid as long as I don't have to worry about the cops showing up.
Hey guys, I'm down to do something stupid. Who's in?
Right. Hold my Mountain Dew and watch this.
Okay. So you went to I guess it's the middle school now, but that's where the high school was, yeah?
Yes, that was the high school at the time.
You still stay in touch with anybody? Like, lifelong friends? Or
yeah, I mean, I still run into people occasionally. Honestly, the people I hung out with the most in high school, we kind of went our separate ways. One of them, probably the one I kept the closest touch with, his name was Joe Peters. He was killed in Afghanistan in 2013. So one of the ones I kept regular, you know, touch with that kind of changed.
Well, sure.
But he was a Republic boy, too. I think he'd been here longer than I had. I still occasionally run into people, you know. People don't move too far away from home.
Most of the time.
And occasionally I run into people down at the lake. I'm like, I went to high school with you.
Yeah, sure.
Can I see your ID?
So you knew back then you wanted to get into law enforcement.
I always did, yeah. I mean, I wanted to do the military thing and law enforcement since I could remember. I had one brief time where I was like, you know what? It'd be kind of cool to be a doctor. They have nice things and make good money. But then I was like, I don't have the grades for this. I'll be honest, the attention.
That's a lot of school.
Right. I didn't have the attention stand for it. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. You know, guys are like, recruiters are like, hey, man, you can shoot guns and blow stuff up. I'm like, deal.
So you graduate. You're like, got to do something with myself here. So you decide instead of going to the police academy, you go in the Marine Corps.
Yep.
Why?
Well, I knew I had to wait a few years to get in law enforcement because you have to be 21 when you graduate the academy.
This is what year?
This would have been 2007, six.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay, so
six.
I mean, war on terror is like
full on
raging
right.
dumpster fire at
right.
this point. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know you
so
got
there's the, you've, okay. So let's take a step back. So if you're like, I just graduated high school, what should I do with my life? And like, you know, you before you even go to the Marine Corps office, like, you can be one of those crayon-eating, you know,
right,
and still understand what you're getting into at that point if you had turned on the news. At, I mean, everybody knew what
right.
was going on,
I mean, that
right?
was the time. You gotta remember, they were still putting, like, death, like, names of people that had fallen in Iraq on TV.
On TV,
like,
yeah.
Like, they
yep.
were still
oh, yeah.
televised, and, you know, people liked it. They're like, hey, you know, good things. Thanks, W, you know.
Oh, yeah, I remember they were putting, they play, like, sad music or whatever, right. And, like, list the names and show their pictures and stuff. And,
right.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't get away from it at
I mean,
that
even,
point.
Like, think, like, national news, they were still, like, you know, there was 10 killed in Iraq today,
yep.
IEDs.
Yep.
You know, now people's like, oh, they're still over there?
They're still over there. Well, not for long.
No.
Well, like, Afghanistan, anyway, we're
right.
getting out. So, so you're like, all right, Marine Corps, so why? Like, what was the decision as opposed to going into law enforcement at that point?
It was kind of a weird turn of events. I played baseball. Was kind of hoping that would be an end for paying for college, because my parents were just, you know, blue-collar citizens. My dad's like, you want to go to college, you're going to have to pay for it.
What position did you play?
I played third base and shortstop.
Okay, yeah.
So I wasn't great at it, but I wasn't terrible. I was, you know, I'd stop the ball from time to time.
You're not right field, so... Shortstop is
right.
like if baseball players have like a rank structure, you know,
right.
you weren't right field.
Yeah, but if you look at the pros, man, I mean that's a special position. You know, you got to be good at catching fly balls. But yeah, so I played ball, had a few arm injuries. It's just that wasn't in the cards for me. I come from a family that has a lot of military background on my dad's side. I have cousins that were Green Berets and Special Forces and. So that's kind of where I was leaning. I was like, yeah, I'll do the same thing. I actually tried joining the Army first and kind of got jerked around by a recruiter. And a good old Marine Corps recruiter kind of came in like a hawk and, you know, nonchalantly one day in the lunchroom's like, hey, I hear you're going to the Army. Got a contract, go to Ranger School. And I'm like, I'm glad you know that because I've not heard that yet.
Okay, lunchroom.
Yeah, like in the cafeteria.
Of
the high school? Yeah.
Oh, the high school. Okay,
yeah,
I was like, what lunchroom are you eating where there's Marine Corps recruiters hanging out? Like,
no, yeah, like they. Used,
oh, okay, okay. Yeah,
they come poach
sense.
Kids out of the, you know, the cafeteria.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, hey, you look stupid. You want to do something in life?
Okay, so all right, so Army recruiter's not doing his job very well,
and, right? And then, you know, I gave the guy a benefit of the doubt, you know, and figured, you know, he's got other things to do too. Dodged a bunch of my phone calls and
literally he does not have anything else to do
right.
other than recruit people. So
no, I know that.
That
at the time I
at
didn't.
The time he didn't
right
sure.
So the Marine recruiter kind of swooped in. It's like, hey man, congratulations, yada yada yada. And I'm like, yeah man, that's news to me. And he's like, really? You know, does kind of like this shady guy on the street with a, you know, jacket, opens up, is like, would you like to buy a watch? And I'm like, okay, cool. He's like, would you like to go to exotic places and kick indoors? I'm like, I mean, sure. Sounds fun. But, yeah, and that just kind of fell into it. And next thing I know, I called my mom from Kansas City, like, the day I talked to the recruiter. I'm like, hey, I'm up at MEPS. And I joined the Marine Corps. I'm going to be in infantry. And then I remember my mom dropping the phone and crying. And my dad's like, what'd you say to your mother? I was like, I joined the Marine Corps. He's like, oh, so you coming back? I was like, yeah, I'll be back later tonight. He's like, oh, okay. My mom was mad. She threatened my recruiter a few times.
Mm. Wow, that's intense.
Yeah.
So you didn't discuss this with your parents?
Nope.
Like,
I was 18 my entire senior year. I didn't either.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, you didn't. I'm not sure you didn't need it. But, like, most people would be like, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, this is something I'm.
Right.
They had to have known you were talking to the Army recruiter.
They
yeah.
did. They did. I mean, my dad wasn't surprised at all. My mom was hoping it was a phase, you know, because she watched the news.
Right.
Right.
But, and saw the names and
right.
the sad music. And,
right.
Yeah.
And she had friends and stuff, you know, like, you know. Tammy's son's Bobby's cousin got
sure,
killed in Iraq,
sure.
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but yeah, I kind of
oh,
ran into
dang.
It full head on. I was off to boot camp probably a week or two after I graduated high school.
Wow.
I was ready to go. You know, I was like, let's do this. So.
Okay. So Marine Corps boot camp. Would you go back and do it again?
Oh, what? Yeah. It was fun.
Oh, so whatever.
It sucked at the time. I mean, anyone tells you it didn't, it sucked. I mean, the Marine Corps changed a lot. And, I try to keep up with stuff as much as I can. And it's changed a whole lot more recently. I mean, drastically than what it used to be, but you know, the drill instructors got a little rough, you know, but it was fun. I mean, I probably talked to more guys I went to boot camp with than the people I went to high school with.
Yeah, sure.
Right. But
yeah, yeah,
it was fun. I mean, actually was just talking about this today at training with some of the SWAT guys. A couple guys were in the Marine Corps, and we got to talking about where, you know, MCRD San Diego sits is right across the bay from the San Diego International Airport. So as this recruit who's, you know, a hayseed from Missouri, sitting here in this barracks with these really mean guys with crazy looking hats screaming at you all the time, And you watch airplanes just one after another leave. And the only thing stopping you between there is some little bit of water and a chain link fence. You're like, man, I can make that. And they're like, you're never getting on a plane. You're not going to get on that plane.
They're like, we know.
Right.
We know. We see it on your face. We know what you're thinking.
Right.
Idiot.
I had to chase a few airplanes, actually. They're like, hey, Marenghi, what are you looking at? I'm like, oh, crap. They're like, you know what? Go catch that plane. You know?
Did you catch it?
No.
Oh, okay.
Never caught it. All right. Never caught it. But yeah, I'd go back. I mean, knowing what I know now, I'd go back.
Yeah, okay. And so then, so infantry. So not even like, you're not even doing MP stuff. I mean, You're just straight up like, dude, yeah. Let's go to the front.
Yeah, I had that patriotic flame, for lack of a better term, at that point. You know, I knew people that had already been over, and, you know, I was at an old enough age that I remember watching what happened on September 11th on TV.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know what? Let's go. I'm ready. I'll go to some hot, sandy country and do stuff that they want me to do, you know.
And so you did.
I did.
So where'd you go?
I deployed to Iraq.
Okay, so this is like surge time frame.
Oh, yeah. It was 7. Yep. Things were pretty hot.
So tell me about that.
It was a eye-opening experience, for lack of a better term. I, being a 19-year-old kid from the Midwest, and the most exciting thing I did was maybe jump off a few bridges into a lake, you know, to going into Ramadi and outside of Fallujah and stuff like that, and, you know, when things were still popping off pretty heavy. It was eye-opening. I remember very vividly that the first firefight we got into, we had this a sergeant who was just like the epitome of what you think of an infantry sergeant would be. I mean, he had the hair, he looked good, he had just enough don't give a crap. You're like, you thought he was cool, but yeah, he was still squared away. And we started taking rounds, and he comes running up all cool and slid up next to me, and I'm like, this is stupid. I'm getting shot at. This is dumb. This is nothing like Call of Duty, you know? Right? And I remember thinking right. that. I truly do. I was like, this is dumb. Why did I want to do this? I volunteered to do this, to fly thousands of miles away to do this. And he came in. He's like, hey, look at me. Do you have Gerber on you? I'm like, we're getting shot at, dude. Why do you need a Gerber? And it was just something to get me clicked out back, you know, back in the game, and, you know, move on and do our job. But yeah, it was a life changing experience, for about the best way I can put it.
I don't even know if you can describe it, but like, what does that do to you? You know, because you're describing this the first time this is happening. You didn't expect it. Obviously, it wasn't the only time that happened while you were over there. So, like, as, you know, looking at the person you are now, because, you know, it's been a few years now, you know, looking back on that, like, and if you would have taken that experience away to where it's like you would have never actually, you know, been in combat, like, how makes you different?
You know, I mean, that's a really good question. I don't know if I have a really good answer for you. I think a lot of it is just that ability to think under pressure, you know, being in a stressful situation where it's just overmounting amount of stress, where you're just, my gosh, this is too much, and to be like, you know what, think your way through it. I mean, it's a thinking man's game, no matter what, you know. Even though it's crazy to think about it, bullets flying overhead, just utter chaos, because that's all combat is. It's just utter chaos that you're trying to control as best you can. You know, it's, you learn to think through it, you know. Control yourself, slow your breathing down, think about the situation, work your way through it, you know. I'd say that's probably the best thing I got out of it, you know, getting situations, especially in my job now, where, you know, you stop and think, okay. And the nice thing is, once you've been in, you know, firefight, something like that, nothing can really ever be worse than that. So you're like, I've been in the worst situation that I can imagine in my life. Now it's like, okay, this ain't so bad, you know. And I guess that's the way I personally look at it. I know there's guys that are well more educated than myself that talk about it, and I'm like, oh, yeah.
Well, it's not necessarily, you know, being educated, it's just living it, you know?
Sure.
Like, how that affects, because, I mean, it affects people differently.
It does.
You know, not everybody comes out of it the same way.
No, and, you know, that's a big thing. It's always been near and dear to my heart. I have some friends that run work with an organization called Sheepdog. They do a lot of stuff for not just vets, but for law enforcement too, guys that deal with PTSD and stuff. And I mean, that's near and dear to my heart, because, I mean, you don't go through a situation like that without dealing with a little bit of something. I mean, I don't care who you are, it's just how the brain works. You're going to have something that triggers you. I mean, you may not have what the Hollywood shows, you know, naked in the bathroom, shower, just fully clothed, drinking, you know, whatever. It's, everyone deals with stuff differently, but there's stuff that you're like, you know, it's not a healthy thing to go through as a human being. I don't care what anybody says, you know. But, you know, everyone does come out different. I mean, it's true. Some guys they're built for it. Other people, you know, want to be built for it and do it, and they're not have the right mindset to do it, I guess. I mean,
yeah. So what happens to guys like that where they're like, you know, hoorah, I'm in this, and then all of a sudden they're like, mommy, and then like, right. And they're just not like they just don't have the it. You know what I mean? Like, does that? And they just crumble. Like, what? But it's like, dude, you're already here.
Right.
Like, I mean, what do you do then? Like, you can't go home at that
right?
point.
You
like,
can. I mean, there's not like, you know what? I'm going to tap out and walk away from it.
Right.
I mean, and it's.
And you may not know that until you're in it.
And that's,
like,
that's the problem with it. I mean, that's what makes, you know, not just, you know, the military as a whole. I mean, you know, you join the Army and become an MP. You get to go do your job. You know, you go out and make arrest and, you know, do what cops do. You join the infantry. Your job is to, you know, go to war. And a lot of guys, you know, you'll talk to them. They'll talk about their time in the military. And they're like, you know, it was peacetime. You know, I didn't do anything. I hiked a lot of mountains, carried a lot of gear, and cleaned a lot of guns, and that was about it, you know. So, I mean, there's that need and that want for have your mettle tested because you don't know what you're going to do until you're in it. I mean, no one does. You can read all the books, you can train, you can try to do everything you can to get to it, but until that happens, you know, you don't know what you're going to do, you know, and everyone just hopes they step up and, you know, and I've seen guys that, you know, maybe not start out in that right mindset, but by the end of it, man, they were rock stars. There's growth that has to happen, learn how to deal with the situation at hand, you know, and push through it no matter how uncomfortable you are.
So you were in Fallujah for a time, yeah?
Yeah, I've been a little time inside of Fallujah.
What was that like? And so, like, what era is that? Because I know, you know, there's the Battle of Fallujah.
Right, now, that was definitely before I joined
the Marine Corps. Yeah, that was a little earlier on.
Yeah, that was, I mean, you're talking like 2003, 2004.
Yeah.
And then they went back in the city, what, 2005-ish?
Yeah, they had to, like, essentially retake it.
Right,
so is that where, is that
no,
where
No, I was after in? Actually after that. So I was still, things were still kind of hairy over there, but it wasn't, you know, we weren't like, you know, blockading a city and, you know, rolling in armor and
dropping
like
leaflets.
Right.
And it's like, you better get out. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that was definitely before me where guys were rolling in soft armor Humvees and stuff, you know, and like, yeah, we don't have, you know, you don't need a plate carrier. It's fine.
So what's the relationship like with the public? You know, like when you're like walking the streets and you just see, you know, Joe citizen of Iraq.
Right.
Is everybody an enemy or because I'm assuming that your trust in the locals is probably a little strained,
right?
From, you know, from your experiences. So, I mean, so what's that like? Like, you're walking through there, and you know, the war is not super popular that many years on for a lot of you know, a lot of the people there. So,
and
I
quickly
mean,
getting more and more unpopular.
Yeah, sure.
It's not easy. I mean, that is probably the most stressful thing about it, in my opinion. I mean, that's where you get a lot of these guys that have issues because they're so hyper-vigilant for so long constantly because we're there to help make a better place, right? We're not there just to go full Viking and pillage and plunder and burn everything and then just, you know, walk out and leave the door unlocked as you leave.
They may think you are, though.
Yeah, they
that's
think
the
we
problem
are.
Is
right,
they,
and that's
the
problem.
Their image of you.
You know, but you'd run into people that would just absolutely love us. You know, they'd be happy to see us. They'd, you know, they'd wave, they'd pick their kids up, you know, and they'd be super happy and try to come up and, you know, take their get a picture. You know, they like to trade things for memories. So like, hey, you know, try to take your Oakleys for, you know, a scarf or something. You're like, nah, no, these it's way too much money.
Yeah,
for these
sorry,
things.
Dude, not my Oakleys.
Right, but then other ones, you know, they would just kind of glare at you. You know, you get the mean mug look, and you're like, oh, okay, we're gonna probably have to. There'd probably be an IED there tomorrow. You know. It's hard to get used to. I mean, you drive through one neighborhood one day and kids are playing in the streets, playing soccer. They're happy. You know, you toss some candy out to them. You try to do the public relations thing, you know, hearts and minds. And then next day there's an IED there. I mean, you know, the same neighborhood a day later. I mean, that's probably where I think a lot of guys came home with a lot of issues because you're so hyper-vigilant for so long with that. I mean, like I said, it's taxing on a person. It can be.
Well, I mean, like it's, your brain is producing so much cortisol for so, like your brain is not designed to stay in that heightened awareness all the time for that long of a period of time.
Right.
And it does something to the chemical, you know, balance of your brain. Like you can't, you know, and then it's like, okay, the war's over. You cannot do that anymore. And they're like,
most guys can't shut it off.
Right.
I mean, they may
it
dial it back. But I'll even say personally, I don't think I've ever shut it off. I mean, I've probably dialed it back a lot. And longer and longer I've been away from it and stuff, I have. I mean, my job doesn't help with that. I you know, for what I do, I mean, I have to try to stay on my toes and not be complacent, you know, especially with the everything going on in the world right now. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's a lot of it. It's just, you know, you just kind of get stuck. You become programmed, and that's all you know. That, you know, I remember when I first came home, I walked into Walmart with my family, and I freaked out about halfway through Walmart. I couldn't find my rifle. I went everywhere with my rifle.
In Walmart?
Yeah, and I reached down, just touched my chest, and I'm like, oh, crap. I don't have my rifle on me. And brother kind of looked at me weird. He's like, dude, you didn't bring it with you. It's wherever your base is. And I was like, oh, you know. It took me a second, like, this is embarrassing, because
I'm in Walmart.
Right, I'm in Walmart, like, you know. The Walmart that I went, you know, hung out when I was in high school with, yeah, and sure, stuff, you know. And, but just after that brief split second, you know, I reached for it and was like, oh, God, it's not there. Because, you know, I had it with me physically everywhere I went. You know, it was with the arm's reach at any given time. You know, even when I took a shower, yeah, or something like that, I could literally step out and it was there. So.
Yeah. PTSD is a weird thing. And I, like, there's a guy that, because I'm in the VA system, you know, take advantage of that healthcare.
Sure.
Absolutely. And there's like a advocate guy that I kind of have to go through, and like he makes sure that I stay plugged into the system and, you know, whatever, and there's any issues. And like, dude, every time I've gone to see that guy, he's like, so you got some PTSD? And I'm like, nope. And he's like, are you sure? And I'm like, nope. And he's like, here's a pamphlet about PTSD. And it's like, you know, can't hard time sleeping, you know, whatever. And he's like, have you ever in your life, even once, maybe experienced any of those 500 symptoms? And I'm like, I mean, I guess sometimes, like, I worked nights for a while and had maybe a hard time sleeping. He's like, all right, well, I can send you to a guy and we're going to talk about PTSD. And I'm like, I don't have PTSD. I'm okay. I'm going to go now.
That's... Are, like, you sure you don't want the PTSD?
I'm sure. I'm, yeah, yeah. Are you sure you don't want to take some PTSD with you?
Right.
As
we have,
you go,
these three different plans. Like, this one's, you know, five easy pamphlets at $39.95.
I'm like, dude, I'm good. Like, you know. So on one hand, like, I'm glad that it is something that in their own clunky and awkward way that the government does things. Like, they acknowledge that it exists.
Right.
You know, it's not just this thing that is like, you know, like it was back in, like, Vietnam and stuff.
Or even
just
before,
like,
that. Yeah, you just don't talk about it.
Yeah, you just... Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, you end up... Basically, they just think you're crazy. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And they're like, oh, he's just mentally ill. Well, it's like, yeah, but it's because of...
Right.
You know, what you went through. So, you decide to get out?
I did. I decided to get out.
Why get out instead of stay?
At the time, I was married. And I was young. I married a girl I went to high school with. Military life's not easy on a new marriage, especially two young kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got out because it seemed like a good thing to do with our marriage. Things were really rocky to begin with. Unfortunately, didn't fix the situation. But I got out, you know, be home with my family, you know, see my friends again, sleep on a bed, you know, the wonderful things about living in a, you know, first world country and not being
asleep. Right.
So I did just, you know, I move on with a new chapter in my life. I loved what I did. I wouldn't change it for the world. But that being said, you know, I didn't necessarily thought I would think I was going to be a lifer anyways to begin with. You know, I got in because I wanted to get some of the experiences and, you know, have that pride of serving my country. And, you know, and then I was like, you know, there's other things I want to do with my life. And so that's kind of what I did. I got out and was completely and utterly lost for a while. You know, I tried to get a job and went through the whole process. Like, well, you don't have the qualifications or you're overqualified. And it's like, dude, I'm not here for your job, man. I just need a job.
Yeah. You know? I mean, so what do you do? I mean, as an infantryman, and what was, like, because, correct me if I'm wrong, when you're in the infantry, your actual job is a little more specific than that.
Right,
like,
yeah, I mean, it depends.
What did
on,
you actually do? Like,
so
what
I
was
did,
your...
my original MOS was anti-tank and demolition, so I got to shoot anti-tank missiles and play with C4. I mean, that's the short version.
Yeah, yeah.
I did some stuff with radios, you know, doing some FO stuff, forward observer, just learn how to call fire missions, stuff like that. That's, like, the gist of it.
So how do you bring that up as an asset when you're interviewing for a position at Lowe's?
Right. And they're like, you know, sir, the nail's on aisle 4 and the deck cord is down aisle 6.
Right.
You know, I struggled with it. I really did. I try to think of jobs that are like, okay, you know, these are going to be military friendly jobs. You know, hey, you probably have to carry a gun, protect something. So I looked in, like, security jobs. I applied for a job with, a couple armor car companies in Springfield. Pretty much got told to kick rocks. Either one, because I didn't have the right qualifications, or two, I was overqualified. I remember one of the interviews, the guy's like, you know, have you ever done anything with armored vehicles? And I was like, man, I did like 4,000 miles of convoys in a foreign country.
I practically lived in
right?
one.
Like, man, it was my home away from home. He's like, oh, okay. Well, I feel like you're overqualified. And I remember telling him, I was like, man, I don't want your job. I just want a job, man. Like, I'm sitting home, and my wife at the time, we were still married, she worked. I couldn't clean the house more than I already did. I mean, I was going crazy, right. You know, and so I bounced around. I took a job with a little security company, Securitas, and sat in the Springfield Underground for like 2 months. Was just mind-numbingly terribly stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, it was cool. I sat in the Springfield Underground. They're like, hey, you know, here's your post. And being a military guy, I'm like, okay, you know, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
Watch these computers, check people in, and don't fall asleep. Like, what? If you do fall asleep, though, just turn the monitors up a little bit so that way they can wake you up. And you can watch DVDs, man. It don't matter. Turn the lights off. I'm like, oh, okay.
I feel like at any job, don't fall asleep shouldn't have to be said out loud.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I feel like that is like, that's like a given when you, you know, sign up for a job that you shouldn't have to be told. That's like saying, please don't steal from us.
Right.
It's like you shouldn't have to say it. It's just
that
kind
people
of
like,
a
hey,
given.
You know, don't we're a department store. Don't take our stuff.
Right.
Yeah. So I worked there for just a couple months and knew a guy through the Marine Corps Reserve, because actually when I got out, I did a little time with the reserves, and he actually put me in touch with a job at the hospital. And it was Jeremiah Clinish, actually. He's like, dude, you come work here. He's like, I mean, it's not the greatest job in the world, but he pays decent. He said the guys are good, you know.
Sure.
And I was like, dude, I just need a job, and I can't do this much longer. So I put an application in, and I got a call back pretty quick. And, yeah, then I started working at Mercy, which, you know, over my time there, you know, going from just, you know, sitting in the psych hall and to, you know, that working as a corporal and taking the lieutenant spot that I did, you know, I grew as a leader. I learned to do leadership outside the military, where you don't, like, beat people with rocks and tell them to do stuff. You know, you actually have to finesse the situation.
You can't do that in the civilian world.
Right. Like, it's frowned upon. It makes for a hostile work environment.
But, I mean, I do remember the first time you picked up a rock, and I was like, Murray, you don't!
Right? Like, no, you can't do that. I'm
there's
like,
there's a formal disciplinary process. I'll get you the form. Don't do it.
I looked at you and grunted a few times. You're like, well, you know. But, yeah, I mean, that was one of the biggest things I contribute there, you know, working for, you know, with you and, you know, Dennis and Dwayne, those guys, you know, I learned a lot, you know, and I grew. There was definitely some lows where I was super frustrated as a supervisor there that were just taxing, that I was tested, for lack of a better term.
Oh, sure.
And, but it helped me grow. You know, I learned a lot, made me definitely more confident of a person and different aspects of my life. Just like, you know, learn how to deal with people and learn to be tactful, not necessarily, you know, violence doesn't fix all answers, you know, doesn't fix everything, you know. But, I enjoyed it there. I had a lot of fun working there. I mean, we did.
Now, so then you went to the academy.
Right.
What is the dreary academy actually like? Because I've heard people be like, dude, you know, it's pretty cool. Like, it's pretty tough. Had to really apply myself. And then there's people like, dude, that thing was a joke. You know what I mean? So is it somewhere in between? Or
I'd say it's somewhere in between. You know, I'm not gonna dog with too much because I know a bunch of the instructors and stuff up there.
Right, sure. Right?
And I have a lot of respect for
right.
them. But, I mean, it's a good academy. You know, I actually have been teaching at the Sheriff's Association Academy now through working down with Stone County. I taught at Drury for several years working up there.
Yeah, sure.
With Mercy doing, you know, peacekeepers. But yeah. It is. I'd say it's somewhere in the middle of the road. There's definitely, I would say, compared to some of the other academies I've seen, they cover a lot more ground than like the state bare minimum. The state says you have to have, you know, I don't know what's at now, 700, 800 post credits. Drury does like 1,200. They do a lot of extra stuff that you don't have to have, but try to get you prepared for a job that they can't physically get you prepared for. I mean, they're like, you know, you go through the academy, and you get out with your first FTO, and they're like, yeah, remember everything you learned in the academy? You're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. They're like, that's stupid. Forget it. And you're like, okay, this guy's just giving me a hard time. And then you're like, you know, you get done, and you're like, the academy didn't prepare me for any of this,
right?
Like,
right.
This lady's naked, running around the yard, screaming and yelling, holding a 2x4, and you're like, okay, I feel like I'm back at Mercy now,
right?
You're like, I've seen this movie before.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, dude, people don't understand, like, what you saw at Mercy, and, like, nothing shocks you anymore.
And you remember, I mean, every time we do interviews, we'd interview a lot of, you know, retired cops, you know, they're, man, they're easy to train. And you're like, hey, man, listen, you know, just so you know, this isn't your normal mom and pop security place. You know, we get our hands dirty.
They're like, oh, yeah, they're like, whatever.
Okay, yeah,
whatever.
Rent-a-cops, right? Yeah. And then you'd have them go, oh, my God. Yeah. I fought more people here in 2 months than I did this 20 years on the road.
Within the first, like, month, they're going to be like, oh, my gosh, right? I had no idea. I thought you guys were being...
Right? Blowing smoke.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, nope.
Nah, man, we're not joking. You know, and even now, like, you know, I would say that job there working at Mercy has made me really good at dealing with people on the road.
Yeah, it probably made you a way better cop, man.
It has. I mean, I'm probably way more patient than a lot of guys I work with who are fantastic and phenomenal deputies. I've just had to get, you know, for lack of a better term, just beat down mentally and working in some of the, you know, some of the psych situations we worked in. Where
yeah, sure.
There's no other reason, but you just got to let them talk it out, you know, yell and scream and stuff. So now it's like, well, okay.
Yeah. You know. So you're in Stone County, you're kind of shielded, I would think, from a lot of the stuff that's kind of going on in law enforcement today. And I don't want to get too political necessarily, but I am interested in your perspective as somebody who grew up wanting to be a cop. I mean, this has always kind of been your goal.
Right.
You know, now you're there. There's a big difference between working in, you know, in southern Missouri versus in the heart of Kansas City or St. Louis or whatever. But, I mean, just kind of your quick take, your thoughts about how policing is changing, where it's kind of where it's going, the good and the bad. So, like I said, not so much the political aspect of it, but there is no denying that change is happening and change is coming.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
I mean, unfortunately, it's happening fast and some good. I'm not going to say that it's all bad by any means. Because there's definitely stuff that, you know, guys need to be better at. Guys, men and women, both in law enforcement, is just, you know, talking to people is one of them. I mean, that being said, you know, I'm very lucky and I work in a community that is true blue, God bless America and pass the ammunition. You know, when everything was going on earlier, you know, last year when all the riots and stuff were happening, you know, it was humbling because we'd go to, you know, a gas station or we'd go to a restaurant, try to sit down to eat really quick. And people would just go out of their way to shake our hands and thank us, say, hey, listen, you know, we support you. We appreciate what you do. You know, thank you. You know, and it meant a lot, you know, because, you know, unfortunately there's guys doing the same job in, you know, LA or, you know, somewhere else, and man, they're just getting browbeat, you know, and, you know, unfortunately, it's a hard job to do. You know, I definitely see it happening with some of the bigger agencies, you know, through social media and stuff like that, where they're getting members of the community to come out and see what we do, you know, not just do a ride-along, because a ride-along is a ride-along. Man, you sit in the passenger seat, pretty much as a rider in a ride-along, you just hope to get lights and sirens to a call once or twice, and that'd be cool. I had my mother come with me on a ride-along.
You brought your mom to work?
I brought my mom to work.
Like, hey, guys, this is my mom.
Well, in my defense,
please watch your mouth.
She was relentless about wanting to come ride with me, and I was very hesitant at first because my mother, just like my time in the military, is very oblivious to some of the experiences that I had, and I very successfully kept it that way.
Okay.
Kind of like, I love hot dogs, I don't know how they're made. That's kind of what I was hoping with her.
Okay.
But she was relentless about it. So I was like, all right, you know what? Let's go. So she rode with me, and I remember first traffic stop I did with her in the car. Like, I was like, okay, we'll light this guy up. So I hit the red and blue lights, go to pull his car over, and she goes, aw. I was like, what? She goes, I kind of feel bad for him. He's getting pulled over.
You're like, that's not how this works.
I was like, you're on the opposite end of this now, you know?
Yeah, you're like, you're talking to the guy, getting ready to put him in handcuffs. She comes out. No, Mikey!
Right, stop
don't
it.
Don't you stop that.
You be
don't
nice.
You do that.
You be nice. Come on, get back in the car. But,
I'm sure he just forgot to put on his seatbelt.
But, you know, like I was getting back on track, they're letting a lot of people in the community get kind of see what we do with simulator training, you know, where...
Oh, that's a good one, yeah.
Simulators are awesome, yeah, especially where, you know, it's a, you know what? It's a living, breathing, you know, situation where you're on a screen, you're trying to talk to them, there's someone controlling the computer, you know, changing the responses of a suspect, something like that. And, you know, I watched one, it was out of, I want to say like Cincinnati or something like that. She's, you know, she's going through the scenario and there, you know, there was a father having to get ready to throw his baby off a bridge. And, you know, she gets done doing it and she did a great job. She did a fantastic job. We get done and she's like, like exhausted. And it's like, you know, that's the kind of stuff that people see what we deal with. It's not just.
And then on to the next call.
Right. And then you're like, okay, and I'm done.
I've been on shift for 30 minutes.
Right.
11 and a half hours ago.
Right. And it's like, well, I'm going to do paperwork in this, but I'm going to go deal with this next situation now and hope to God I can go to the bathroom somewhere in between, you know, but it's a good thing. So that getting the community involved in what we do, I think that's been a very positive thing. Lucky, I work in a community that likes us for the most part, besides, like the regulars that, we constantly deal with. But even them, honestly, I truly state that, one of my buddies I was actually in the Marine Corps with is a police officer in California. And we stay in touch, and, we talked one day, and this has been a while ago, and I said, I truly believe if I was on the side of the road fighting for my life with a suspect, and some of these guys that I've arrested on a enough basis that I got the last four of their social memorized, that they would stop and get out and help me. I truly believe that.
Interesting.
Just because it's different. I mean, it's that we arrest them, they're like, man, okay, you do this thing? Yeah, sir. Okay, well, you know how this goes.
It's like it's like Otis the Drunk from Andy Griffith.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, not quite to that level.
Not quite that innocent.
Right,
but yes.
Yeah, absolutely. That they're like, oh, I messed up. You caught me. It's like a game. My job's to catch you, and your job's to not get caught. And if catching, like, all right, man, you got me. And, they go to jail, and then a couple months later, like, hey, Deputy Marenghi, how you doing? I'm like, oh, hey, Gan, good, how you do? And he's like, I'm doing good. I've been clean for 2 months. Man, that's awesome. Glad to hear it. And then, we end up arresting him again.
Right.
But it's a perpetual cycle. Right. But, I'm very thankful for. It may not be super high speed life PD, LAPD style law enforcement where you're fighting drugs and all this other stuff, which we have plenty of that.
Even no matter where you're at, it's not like that all the time anyway,
right?
I mean, that's a very small percentage of what actually happens,
But I mean, you have an agency like the Los Angeles Police Department where they a single patrol car can deal with more in a single shift than a lot of guys do in their whole career, and there's a lot of truth to that. I'm lucky, like I said, I get best of both worlds. I get the small town feel where, you drive through a neighborhood and people are waving, and then come summertime, we're so stinking busy, we can't see straight. And, we have 9 state campgrounds. We have 50 some odd, almost 60 square miles of lake.
You skipped over this. You have a conservation degree, is that right?
I did go to school. Yeah, I got a degree.
Yeah, because one of the things that you had flirted with is conservation.
Yeah, I did.
And so, I mean, this is kind of like that a little bit without being it. Because, you're talking about having to respond out to campgrounds in the lake.
Right.
And, you're outside all the time.
All the time.
So
hiking through the woods. Yeah. Yeah, it was something I was interested
in. Your element.
I actually was an ag major and just, more toward the conservation management side because I thought it'd be cool.
Which college?
I finished out at MSU.
Was this after the Marine Corps?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I did a lot of it online.
You're like, oh, yeah, that thing. Like,
yeah, I'll be honest, it's kind of worthless degree right now. I don't use it.
Oh, sure, right.
But I could still do that. I mean, they do a lot of lateral stuff, but I like what I do.
Yeah, I was going to say, you seem pretty happy.
I'm very happy. I had an opportunity. Some guys that we used to work with worked at other agencies and would just blow my phone up like, hey, man, come over here and work, wink, wink, nudge.
I do that too still sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, I haven't heard from you in a while.
Right.
You want to jump?
Yeah. And it happens. It happens in, whatever. And I'm like, I'm good. I'm happy.
So I assume, because of your interest in your degree in the outdoors, that what you do in your free time probably has something to do with that as well.
I still do a lot of hunting. I do a lot of duck hunting. I actually duck hunt with a few guys that I work with. I actually had a sponsorship last year before through duck hunting.
No kidding.
Yeah, I started, I got it way, way, way late to the game, but started using Instagram started to run across these small companies. Actually do half my shopping through Instagram, like t-shirts and stuff to support small businesses. That's cool. Like veteran owned guys are like, yeah, we make t-shirts out of our garage, make some cool stuff. I'm like, heck yeah, man, I'll support you, And ran across to a small mom and pop duck calling company out of Texas. And, they were like, hey, we're looking for pro staff, guys to come, rep our stuff. And I'm like, I've never done this before. I don't know. I'm kind of stupid when it comes to, using social media. My brother's really smart. And he's like, oh, man, this is how you do it. You're, an influencer. And he's like, this is how you do it. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Go out and just take pictures of what you do in the products, repping them, this other stuff. I'm like, okay, I can do this. And it was cool. It was fun. It was a lot more work than I wanted it to be, because like I said, I work a full-time job and do some part-time stuff to pay for my expensive hobbies. And hunting was like a third thing that I did. And on top of that, I'm trying to, keep up with a social media presence. I'm like, this is exhausting.
Keeping up with a social media presence is exhausting.
Yeah. And I've just never been that person to begin with.
Right. Right.
I'm like, oh, Facebook. Cool.
Like, hey, brother, can you do this for me?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's my thing. I'm like, oh, yeah. So,
like, I'll snap. So, like, what? So, you go out duck hunting and you shoot one. You're like, oh, crap. It's still alive. Better put it out of its misery. Hey, film this.
Not quite.
Make sure I get the brand, my jacket brand. They're right. Like,
Hold on, let me get this angle right here. Get it in. Yeah, you know, just taking pictures of, you know, like their duck calls and, you know, tag them in the pictures. And, you know, it's pretty easy stuff. But again, just someone who's not that, you know, I don't have much of a social media footprint. Honestly, I have an Instagram account and I use that more for finding small businesses. I'm like, oh man, these guys make some cool stuff. You know, like this t-shirt here, you know, I got it through another company. It's like, oh man, that's awesome.
Wow, Mike Maringi, the influencer. I would have never thought, man.
Me neither, right?
That's crazy. I'm gonna be like, hey, do you know Mike Maringi? Oh, you mean the deputy? Oh. No. The influencer.
The influencer.
Someday in the future, would you ever run for sheriff?
Yes, I would. I've actually been asked this question before.
I've asked you that before, but several years ago, and your answer was no.
Yeah, I've changed my opinion on that. I actually made a terrible mistake in a job interview for a sheriff's deputy, telling a sheriff that I would run for sheriff if I had the opportunity. That was a terrible idea, apparently.
You're not supposed to say that.
I guess not. You know, they ask, you know, I felt like it was a fair question. You know, it's like, hey, where do you see yourself in 10 years? I'm like, oh, 10 years. That's long.
That
time
is a
now.
Long time.
Like, that's
sure,
long
yeah.
term. And
you're like, how much gray is in his mustache?
Right.
Okay, you know, he's probably going to be gone.
Get
a
long
so
in the
This
long
will be a
the
safe
tooth.
Answer.
Long in the tooth. Right. I said I never showed it where it was. So, and I'm actually taking some online classes. I'm working on a bachelor degree number 2.
Nice.
And law enforcement administration. It is about as dry as it sounds.
Yeah, but also very targeted.
It is targeted.
So going back to the beginning of our conversation, you moving out of Republic and into Stone County. It's all coming together.
Slowly but surely. Like I said, it's kind of like a game of chess. I had the luxury when I worked at the gun shop to talk to a lot of sheriffs when they come and get equipment for their departments and pick their brain. And
that's right. You worked at the gun shop too. Yeah, that's right.
And so I've done that, and I watched how Sheriff Rader ran this last election, talked to him a little bit, you know, again, picked his brain. He's not going to be sheriff forever.
Yeah.
I'm not going in to, you know, stab anybody in the back or anything like that. And like I've told some of the guys there, I'm like, I may not even be here. It would make more sense, you know, because you want to build, especially in an area like that, you want to build a, you know, rapport with the community and people know you. You want to be a household name.
It would be hard to go to run in another community without having several years of service under your belt.
Unless you ran in a community like, you know, like in Greene County. You know, like Greene County, half the people don't know who the name of the sheriff is anyways. They're just like, okay, this is the one that's currently in. I'm going to check his name. I mean, you know, Sheriff Arnott is, you know, he has to run a true political campaign, you know, as compared to a community like that. Sheriff gets out, packs a pickup truck full of signs.
Sheriff Arnott is a very well-known sheriff.
He is.
I would say compared to other, like if you took other counties throughout the U.S. that are our size, I would say there would not be as many people that, like, where the sheriff is as well-known and prominent.
And he's done a good job of getting himself out there, you know, with, like, getting his department alive, PD, you know, stuff like that. I mean, it was good for him. And like I said, I'm using him as an example.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, as compared to, you know, down in our neck of the woods where you just kind of go around. Have signs in your
truck,
shake hands.
You have to campaign like it's 1850.
Right?
Yeah, you like can't. Right.
Like a scene out of Old Brother, we're out there. You know, I have the guy with the banjo in the back of my truck as I drive down roads, you know. Vote for change.
Right.
But it's something I'm considering long term. I mean, I'm putting a lot of real serious thought into it. I'd like to. You know, after working at Mercy, doing what I did there and then going to the sheriff's department here and seeing what it is. I mean, we did the same job in our job as lieutenants there as the road captain does at the sheriff's office and more. I watched him like, oh man, you're only doing those things? Like, man, we had so much more we did. And that's not an insult at him. I mean, there's a lot of jobs that are spread out through our department that, you know, different people doing different things. But I'm like, that doesn't seem as daunting now. And I mean, and the job of a sheriff is very, very different than, you know, a chief of police. You know, chief of police, you're running a police department. As a sheriff, you're a political figure and you have a chief deputy that runs your sheriff's department. You have to go out there.
Sheriffs have like constitutional obligations.
They do.
Yeah. It's way different. Like,
I've slowly been educated on that. I'm like, oh, wow, okay.
Oh, yeah, like how it's actually set.
Right, how to set up and stuff. You're like, oh, my goodness.
People don't realize like how powerful a sheriff really is that goes into it. But most of the powers that a sheriff has, they never have to use.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's one of those, like, you read in the back of the book, you know, blow some dust off, you're like, oh, wow, he can do that. Right? Yeah. That's where I'm at right now.
That's awesome, dude.
Enjoying it, loving life. Like I said, I love being down there. It's good, you know.
In closing, what is your favorite restaurant in Republic?
I don't know. I really like that new little Mexican restaurant there.
Don Pedro?
Yeah. They're pretty good.
Agreed.
I had their street tacos not that long ago, and that was pretty good. Yep. Just gave me a little glimpse of being back in Cali, you know, getting street tacos.
Yeah, they're pretty good. I go there pretty often.
Right.
It's good stuff.
And so, yeah, I would say that's probably my favorite one right now. I would say it rotates. I do love me a little Diamond Head from time to time. Just that's that classic. It's not Chinese food, but is it Chinese food?
Close enough.
Close enough. I don't know, but it's good. I like going there. But yeah, that place is pretty good.
Anything else on your mind?
No, man. I really appreciate coming out here and letting me, you know, talk to you.
Also, it's good. This is Repmo Radio, where we interview people of interest and influence around our growing community. The idea is to keep our community grounded as we continue to grow, that you can know the people who live around you in the community, man. This place is going to be a big city before you know it.
Oh, yeah.
And so I wanted to be able to just find people in our community that have interesting lives or interesting stories to tell, and just so that way people can kind of get to know their neighbors, even through, you know, it's like when you drive down the street and you see somebody like has their window open and you're driving and you just kind of like, you kind of look a little too long.
Yeah.
You're like, ooh, I can see inside their house. And like,
right?
It's kind of like that feeling.
Just a glimpse.
Just a glimpse.
Just a glimpse.
Yeah, that's right. Just a glimpse into someone else's life.
Okay.
That you might be driving by.
Sure.
Every day.
I like
it's
that.
Kind of like that.
Man, where'd they get that TV from? That's nice.
That's a nice TV. Man, what the heck?
No, I like it.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm very honored to ask me to come in here. I don't feel like I was ever that person of interest.
Oh, yeah. Dude, you got some good stuff, man. All right. Folks, thank you for listening to another episode of Repmo Radio, and we will see you next time.